Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech, driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Alexis Fink and Emily Hudson.
Hello, this is Emily Hudson.
And I'm Alexis Fink.
And this is Intel on AI. Today, we're talking to Ben Vigoda, the founder and CEO of Gamelon. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So Gamelon was founded a few years back, and it's a machine learning startup. Do you want to give us a little bit more background on how you founded Gamelon and what you are trying to achieve with it?
Yeah, we actually started as a big government research project. It was a DARPA program, the Advanced Research Projects Administration, basic research, Columbia University, MIT, Stanford, Berkeley, University of Cambridge. We were all working together. Gamelon was the only company. And we were tasked with investigating this next generation deep learning technology. The program was called Probabilistic Programming for Advanced Machine Learning. And we're in Cambridge, right across the street from MIT. And we have been taking that technology and building business applications on top of it.
So can you talk a little bit about the business problem that Gamelon is trying to solve regarding unstructured data?
So the people who use us are, well, first of all, some of the largest tech firms in the world who have like AI assistants or those kinds of technologies. And they want to monitor all the things that people are saying and understand and manage what all the things customers are saying to the AI in order to understand what are the new things that people are saying or the different things or the different ways that people are trying to interact with a system that's failing. And then as we've gotten good at that, at sort of taking natural language from customer interactions, conversations, chats, phone calls, survey, open-ended surveys, and processing that and displaying it as a kind of a map of issues, issues map of what all the customers are saying, and finding new ones. Once we've gotten good at that, we've started to apply that for digital marketers who have chat on their website, and they're worried, man, if I put chat on my website, is it convert customers? And if it isn't converting customers, why not? What are customers saying to us, or what are we saying to them? That whether it's a human or a bot saying it, that isn't working, that isn't getting them to their next best action in the customer journey. And we're also helping customer experience of VPs and leaders who are trying to find out that exact same thing when it comes to customer service context. So it's really this ability to monitor natural language that's kind of unique. You know, most monitoring is sort of numerical, like, you know, have people left us 5 stars at the end of a session, or did they abandon a call because they were so frustrated? But we don't really know why. We don't know what they said. So the ability to use natural language machine learning to figure out what they were actually talking about, that's new.
And it sounds like you're talking about not only a sense-making process for all of that unstructured data, but also some ability to then make that diagnostic and turn it into something prescriptive.
Lovely. Yeah. We call it next best action sometimes, or taking action. And that could include, you know, a ticket that goes into a CRM. Like, we got to get back to all these people because all their zippers are broken, you know, on their clothes that they just bought from us. We must have a bad batch. Or it could be a report that goes out to our team. If our system generates reports, so you can say, like, you know, we've got this issue, trending team, you know, we got an issue with the zipper sewing factory. We better get on the horn with them. And there's any number of output connectors. So we integrate with all kinds of different software, from marketing automation to CRMs to, and actually our machine learning, which we'll obviously talk more about, since it can read natural language, it can also read computer-generated language. And so it's really, really good at dealing with connecting to other database systems that have the columns sort of reorganized or called different things and stuff. So we're really good at sort of connecting to other enterprise systems and creating actions.
Oh, wait, that's fascinating. I've not heard of a system then could take its capabilities with natural language and then also figure out this variable should mean this, and now I don't need to have such a rigid robotic process for that API, but rather can do it a little bit more organically.
Yeah, the reason our system can do that is because previous natural language systems, you sort of program in things about nouns and verbs and grammar and all that kind of stuff. And our system is unsupervised learning that learns all of those kinds of concepts about a language from scratch. And so if it's machine language and it doesn't have nouns and verbs, but it has a schema, our system will learn a schema just like it would learn a grammar.
Excellent. So you've mentioned machine learning. You've mentioned sort of the evolution beyond taxonomies. What are some of the other technologies or approaches you're using to do this?
Well, so, you know, in academia, and I think it's this infected industry a little bit, to get tenure, you kind of got to have your thing. You know, your thing could be deep learning, or your thing could be Bayesian, or your thing could be maybe at one point in history, I'm sure it'll come again, genetic algorithms or whatever. You know, Pedro Domingos has his book, The Master Algorithm, where he talks about these sort of different, possibly warring tribes of machine learning. You know, but our view is, you know, great artists copy. And so you want to grab the best ideas from across all these different disciplines. And by the way, the statistical signal processing people in the electrical engineering community have a bunch of cool ideas, and the statistical physicists have a bunch of good ideas, and they're all kind of the same math, which is optimization and estimation and modeling. And so what we've done is we have four fundamental principles, and we've just gathered them from all the different hinterlands of the academic literature. And so one of our principles is probabilities. We are Bayesians. We are apologists that models should know how uncertain they are. We think that we don't want machines telling us, do this crazy thing, but it's only 16% certain, but we thought it was 97% certain. Like, machines need to know when they talk to humans and to each other how certain they are. So we put probabilities around every variable in our models, you know, and so we're Bayesians, but we've got three other principles that are gathered from other areas, and we incorporate all the, you know, we like to just use the good ideas where we find them.
That is the best advertisement I've ever heard for this principle that good data science is really a team sport.
I'll say, yeah.
I'd love to hear you talk about some of the really compelling use cases beyond the busted zipper factory that you've been able to
which
apply.
Which I'm sure is a real use case.
That is one we haven't worked on the zippers, but we heard it from a customer that we are working with, something that happened to them that where they didn't catch it in time. For one of our big automaker companies, one of the big four, we found uncomfortable back seats of their minivans across a bunch of different minivan lines, but they all were sourcing the back seats from the same place. We found a backup camera that had an eyebrow that didn't keep the water off as well as the last design. And so people were having trouble seeing through their backup camera. They didn't know. That was not something they were asking about their customers about. It just showed up. When you ask customers, like, what do you like? And you ask customers, like, well, what don't you like? You'll find out all kinds of stuff. And, you know, you can't find that out if you ask them 1-star through 5-star, you know, do you like your muffler? You know, there's just too many questions to have to ask like that to cover all the different issues that could arise. You got to ask your customer, just tell me what your issue is. So that's where machine learning can really help, because you can go beyond structured data of, you know, just questions you've asked and like numerical survey results. With a large health insurance company, we were able to find out that they had a big company that they sold health insurance to, their major U.S. employer, and the renewal was coming up and they were trying to decide which health insurance to go with next. And we were able to go through many hundreds of thousands of inquiries and responses from customers from their call centers and chat and so forth and surveys and so forth, and basically come up with the five things people were really delighted with their health benefits, and also five things that had room for improvement. And they were able to make a couple slides about that using our reporting dashboard and just popped it out, take it over to their client, and they got the renewal because they said, here, first of all, we're doing a great job on these really important benefits for your employees. They're delighted with it. And then, you know, here's our action plan to fix these three or five issues of where we can improve things and work with you on that. And that commitment to continuous improvement by listening to customers was what got them the renewal.
Very cool. So I am feeling like these use cases that you're talking about tie into the concept of idea learning.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that concept?
I think idea learning, for me, it comes from the machine learning first and kind of the technology, and then I can tie it to kind of the business use cases. So bear with me for a minute. So on the technology side, there's deep learning, and idea learning is like deep learning. It is deep. It is neural. It can model. It can learn from data, but it can do something new that regular deep learning can't do. So people, so this is what our second design principle, people can interact with the ideas inside of its mind. Not only can we see it in the UI, but we can also do inception. We can put ideas right into it. So for example, with deep learning, how do you teach deep learning what a cat looks like? Get a bunch of pictures of cats, label them cat, get a bunch of pictures of dogs, label them dog, give that data to the deep learning so it learns that input-output relationship. How would you teach ideal learning what a cat looks like? You would say, a cat has whiskers, a cat has ears, it doesn't have a long snout like a dog, it does have a tail, pretty small, like whatever. You'd kind of interact at a higher level of abstraction. You would tell it about ideas rather than just labeling existing data in the world. And you can also label existing data in the world, but it turns out that you could label 1,000 images, or you could just be like, cats have whiskers, and the system could learn the same thing from both of those approaches, but obviously it's a lot easier to just say cats have whiskers. And so in a business use case, where that really shows up is we can super fast set this up. We can super fast, even if customers don't have labeled data, we can totally learn, which also means we can learn stuff that they don't even know about. Because, you know, if you're labeling data a cat, what if there's an aardvark and you've never heard of an aardvark before? How would you even come up with the idea of labeling aardvarks? You wouldn't. And so discovering, you know, new and unknown, that's something we can do with this approach, because new ideas will pop up and we'll say, oh, look at that new idea in the system. There's something relating to these weird new animals, and they seem to be called aardvarks. And so idea learning is really cool for finding the new. It's really cool for unsupervised machine learning. And it's really cool for putting your business priors in. So it's like, maybe I don't care about what my customers are eating because I'm a car company. So I only want to hear about ideas that are business. You know, if there's a survey, the result that comes in that someone says, you know, I spilled my Slurpee in the car, like we can edit that out. So we can just say, like, what are the ideas that a business user cares about? They can tell the system, here's what I care about, and it can incorporate that directly into its model of the universe.
And it sounds like you're using idea learning and unsupervised methods in combination then later potentially with other supervised methods.
Yeah, it's all one method. It's just that we've merged them all into one beautiful mathematical generalization. So one way to think that I sometimes explain this to people is, you know, a lot of people probably in your listenership, if they've done anything with NLTK or any open source machine learning library or software at all, they've probably encountered like topic modeling, which also is called bag of words, which is also called unsupervised clustering of language. Like there's a bunch of different names for it, latent Dirichlet allocation. So that's an algorithm. It doesn't do everything you'd want it to do, but it's totally unsupervised and it will cluster documents into categories. Unfortunately, the categories are kind of not usually what people like. So first thing we do is provide a UI so that you can easily edit the internal categories within the system in order to change them to your liking. The second thing is an unsupervised system like that, though, doesn't really take into account logical connections between words or ordering of words, or at a higher level abstraction, like phrases and how they're related to each other. Like, are people who are having login problems having it referring to the website, or are they referring to the app? So like, which ideas go together? You know, usually when a customer says something to us, they don't just say one, you know, it shouldn't just go in one file folder. It shouldn't just be categorized. Well, usually they tell us a little short story about what's happened to them. And there's a couple different ideas within that short story. You know, first I went to the website and I tried to log in and I couldn't because I was using the Firefox browser. I'm not sure if that was a problem. So then I called the customer support, but they were really rude to me. They told me I had to go back to the website, use this other login. You know, it's like a journey. And this is what they really look like if you go read them. This is how people talk to companies. So whether they're talking to a bot or a person or sending in an email or survey response, this is how they talk to companies. So to be able to handle that, you need to be able to not just classify or cluster the ideas, but you need to be able to break up the message into the separate ideas and then look across all the messages and say, is everybody kind of telling the same story? What are the variants of this story? And then visually show that to people. Unfortunately, it's a podcast, so we can't show you how we show the stories, but it's pretty simple. Like, we basically show these little phrases and little bubbles, and we give you little Venn diagrams and little timelines to say, like, you know, this group of phrases and their synonyms, no matter how they're worded, are trending up, and a bunch of people are saying this combination of phrase-level ideas. And they're saying it in this order, and sometimes they swap this idea out for this other idea, that kind of thing.
Nice. And so it sounds like your actual user tools include some great visualization to help make that intuitive for folks to get them to that next recommended action.
Yeah, this is one of our design principles which is really people interacting with the machine learning while it learns and with what it's thinking. And so to make that possible, in the same way you put UI UX on regular software, you know, I don't want to spell correct that word, Mr. Microsoft Word, you would do the same thing with now with machine learning. And I think, honestly, the idea of putting a UI UX around the internal explanations and ideas within a machine learning system, that's a really new idea. But I think 10 years from now, that will be a standard idea. Because can you imagine software without a GUI?
Not anymore. I remember what it
was
like.
Not anymore, right? I mean, at one point in history, you know, before the Apple computers and so forth, we didn't have as much of a notion of a graphical user interface. And so we need that for, of course, we're going to have that for machine learning.
Well, this makes so much sense. Ben, this has been a fascinating conversation. Alexis and I hate to put an end to this. I did want to touch real quickly on your relationship with Intel, which is how we are talking with you today.
Yeah.
I understand you've been working with the AI Builders Program.
We've been working with the AI Builders Program, which has been really exciting, talking to Intel's natural language team and also Intel's data and infrastructure groups and data center groups. And we see that these banks and other big regulated companies that need to build on-premise hardware to keep this data super contained and want to use Intel hardware, they want to run the most advanced next generation language understanding software on top of that so they can really mine customer data and really have great customer empathy and continuously improve. And so we see a lot of opportunity for, we're completely x86 and Xeon. We don't use GPUs, actually. And then there's the Nervana hardware that's coming along where we've been talking with them, aligning our roadmaps. And so, we're really excited to work with Intel. And as you know, Intel Capital led a $20 million Series A in Gamelon, which was fantastic.
Yes. So for those of us listening to the podcast who want to get more information about Gamelon, want to maybe see some of these visualizations in action, where can I go for more information?
Just come on over to Gamelon.com. You can chat with us right on the website. Pretty soon you will be able to chat with our AI on our website. And in the meantime, we would love to talk to you human to human.
Thanks so much for joining us today. This has been a great conversation. I'm Emily Hudson.
And I'm Alexis Fink.
And this is Intel on AI. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.